It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and join us, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, last week, Wes and I discussed a title to the program last week was Deeds of Conveyance, and maybe we'll call this program Deeds of Conveyance 2. And what we're really kind of doing is demystifying some of the issues around deeds and the consequence of a deed. Real quickly, we have talked many times on the program about a deed between between spouses. Kind of has a most definitely does have a elevated status, if you will, in the law. Creditors of either spouse cannot attach the property if it is titled tenants by entirety. If the folks who own the property are in fact married, then of course one creditor, creditors of one cannot attach the property of the other. Also, if there is a death of one tenant, one spouse, the property automatically by operation of law, survives to the surviving spouse. So we also want to talk about, we talked about the fact that spouses in our state have to join in on deeds, out conveyances when property is sold, out, even though they may not have inherited the property, just their husband inherited the property, but yet when the property is sold, the wife needs to join in. Things like that. Now today, let's talk about some of the rights, if you will, and also obligations of tenants in common, because that is probably the most common type of ownership. The majority of property probably is owned tenants in common, which means that this is property that is owned, that you've inherited, that you maybe have with a business partner, where you inherited mom and dad's property, and you now there are three children. They each own a third, a third, and a third.
Right.
Maybe a family farm where the four children each own 25%. Possibly you are with your business partner or investor friend, if you will, and you go out and you buy a couple of lots and you own them, you know, 50-50 with your business partner. Maybe even folks we see a lot, as you can imagine, Ben, where people in significant relationships.
Right.
Okay.
That was my next question.
You know, just a lot of folks now are connected in a lot of ways, but are just making a choice not to get married necessarily.
Right.
And yet they own their house, you know, 50-50, okay, between the two of them. So let's talk about now what the rights and obligations are of these folks who own property with another.
Okay. So tenants in common, again, allows for full use of the property by either one, right?
It does. And a lot of people get confused about that. They say, you know, I have 50% of the property, so I'm going to take this 50%. This is my room and that room, and you can have those three rooms over there.
Right.
And it doesn't work that way. It's 50% of the whole. So you have the right to possession of the property. But also, if you're in a position where, let's say that one of the co-tenants is exclusively using the property and basically, you know, defending against the other's use of the property, you can't use the property, I'm using it, I know it's 50-50, that's just the way it is.
Right.
Well, you would be entitled to, as the other 50% co-tenant, you would be entitled to rent in the event you don't have access to it. And that normally is something that comes up in a partition proceeding. You know, these things culminate in the event that you have a 50-50 owner, 25-25-25-25, or third, a third, a third,
right,
or whatever it may be, tenants in common. If the parties don't get along with regard to, you know, how the property is being used, then the law recognizes a way to break up that tenants in common ownership through a pretty streamlined process called a partition proceeding. So we'll talk about that in a moment, but that's just really a court proceeding where you can force a sale, private sale, public sale. It's a matter that you bring before the clerk of court. So, you know, some of the other things that we look at is that you have rights for contribution as well in the event that one party is, you know, paying the mortgage or paying the maintenance or paying the taxes or these kind of things, and you have a right to contribution For those items.
What does that mean? Is it, do you have a right to get that back on a sale or?
Well, you
or
can
does it mean to increase your percentage of ownership?
No, it's not going to affect your percentage of ownership, and I appreciate that because I threw that word contribution out there without much of an explanation. But yeah, we don't see it that often, but there are cases in North Carolina. I've got one of them in particular I'm working on that's on my desk right now. I'm involved in it because of a different reason, but still, it's an action where there was a co-tenant and the one co-tenant paid all of the expenses for a long period of time and brought an action for contribution, meaning you need to reimburse me for these expenses that I paid.
Right, right.
So you do have that right, but a lot of times we end up in that partition posture where, you know, the parties just can't get along as it relates to whatever matter it may be regarding the use of the property. Because maybe one or two of the multiple parties that own the property are carrying all the freight.
Yeah.
You know, they're paying all the expenses. So.
Well, I can see that happening. I mean, a scenario where, you know, somebody moves in with their mom, taking care of their widowed mom, and she dies and she leaves the house to maybe the caretaker and her brother or sister. And,
right.
And then, but she's staying in the house and then all of a sudden she's paying everything.
That's right. That's right. So you've got the, you know, the one co-tenant out there that doesn't want to contribute, but then, you know, in the event that the property is sold, you know, of course we have to have everyone's signature.
Right.
Then, you know, the closing attorney isn't automatically going to, you know, equalize all that.
Uh-huh.
You know, that really brings a lot of liability upon the person closing that to make a determination as to what that equal distribution would be, unless that co-tenant that owes the contribution agrees in writing. So sometimes you do end up in court, whether it be a lawsuit for contribution or whether it be that partition proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
But the clerk of court does have the authority in that partition, meaning the forced sale type of situation, to take in the evidence as it relates to, you know, things that co-tenants have paid for over the years.
Oh, in a partition hearing.
That's right.
Okay.
And the clerk has the right to enter orders to give credits and offsets to the parties so that, you know, the use of the property and payment for use of the property, you know, like I said, maintenance, insurance, taxes, those kind of things, you know, that's equaled out at the time we eventually, you know, go to this sale.
Mm-hmm.
Now, still kind of sticking here with this partition idea, you don't always end up with a sale in a partition.
Right.
Sometimes you end up with a division. And actually, that's where you start. That's the default is the division of the property. But obviously, if we have a piece of property with a house on it, you can't divide it in half if it's a, you know, just a regular residential lot. Normally, when we're talking about tenants in common property, that is in fact, you know, divided in kind into different sections. You know, that's going to be, you know, a lot. That's going to be farmland, it's
right.
Going to be, you know, something like that. And that's normally done by commissioners that are appointed by the clerk of court to take into consideration all the elements with regard to the property and then divide it equally. When I say commissioners, you're normally talking about maybe a lawyer, maybe a surveyor, maybe an appraiser, maybe
people don't have a dog in the fight.
People who are independent.
Mm-hmm.
But who have skill in dealing with these issues. They
right.
have to go to the property, look at the property, so on and so forth. They also have the right when they divide the property to require payment of compensation as it relates to, you know, these issues we talked about as far as contribution. That's kind of an element that we normally don't see, however, in actual division of property.
Mm-hmm.
But they can take that into consideration and maybe order payment or give a higher percentage to one or the other if there's competent evidence before the court showing that there's been that contribution.
You know, see, so all this points back to what we talked about before is North Carolina has expressed desire to have the highest and best use of property, right?
Absolutely. And we're just not going to sit idle and allow property just because it's owned by tenants in common. For instance, you know, inherited property owned by three or four people, to go into waste, to go into decline, to not allow the taxes on the property to be paid, The list is really endless. Let's say one more time, Ben, that that the tenants in common interest, you know, gets then divided again many times.
Right.
Property was inherited 50-50, okay, mm-hmm. by grandmama and great aunt and uncle, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And now that 50 has been divided by their children yet again.
Right.
Okay. This is not unusual at all. And you're able to will, if you will, devise, bequeath mm-hmm. your tenants in common interest. It passes on according to your will and or your trust,
mm-hmm.
Where in your either by a specific bequest, if you're so, inclined to do that, or by just go passing through your residuary.
Mm-hmm.
But many times a tenants in common interest, an undivided interest in the whole, gets divided yet again. And with each and every division, one can only imagine that there then is more possibility for disagreement among the various tenants in common owners,
right.
either disagreement or just one party is just unable financially mm-hmm. to hold up their percentage end of the deal.
Right.
And and what does the other tenants in common owner do if the taxes aren't paid?
Mm-hmm.
And if their co-owner cannot pay their fair share? Well, they don't want to lose the property,
mm-hmm.
and so they pay the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of this, they then have, as Wes was explaining, you know, a right to seek reimbursement and or contribution for the payments that they've made beyond mm-hmm. their percentage interest.
All right. We'll have more on this subject in just a moment. If you have questions about it too, you can call Kenzie right now, if you like, at 800-818-2255 or the local numbers.
247-7282, 353-4674.
Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. It joins us, and we're talking about property. Mm-hmm. And you guys were talking about the some of the rights, and let's talk about some of the things that can go wrong, too.
Let's put a few more tidbits out there, a few more bits of information, if you will, Ben. Let's say that a tenants in common owner, children who have inherited property, say a third, a third, and a third,
mm-hmm.
and now they inherit it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a creditor of one of the three.
Mm-hmm.
This we see a lot of, and this is a problem, because the creditor is now in the shoes or moccasins of mm-hmm. the third, if you will, owner, or the half owner, or the fourth owner,
right.
whatever it happens to be. They now have all of the rights, if you will, of being a tenants in common owner. If they again petition to partition the property, because they are a creditor of one of the tenants in common holder.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our listeners will perk up a bit when I mention this, because there's hardly a week that goes by that a client doesn't mention that, well, by the way, my brother or sister has an IRS lien,
mm-hmm.
and is that going to attach to the property when we inherit it?
Right.
Or, you know, he has some issues with, you know, a creditor or filed a bankruptcy or whatever the case might be. And the answer is, Houston, we got a problem. Because once that tenants in common interest vest in the individual, mm-hmm. if they then have creditors, the creditor's interest attached to their tenants in common interest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, notice that's very, very different than what we talked about before about property between spouses, which is tenants by entirety. Over the break, another little tidbit, if you will, Ben, you said, okay, these folks are living together. They buy their property 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
They're in their relationship, girlfriend, boyfriend, you know, in their 30s, don't want to get married quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden they decide that they will get married.
Right.
And so they go and they get married, but at the time the property is 50-50, and at the time that it was titled to them 50-50, they were not married.
Mm-hmm.
Now they go after that deed and they get married. The property at that point does not automatically become tenants by entirety, because at the time of the deed conveyance, mm-hmm. they were not married.
Right. Okay.
So those folks need to go in and have, very interesting, isn't it, a mm-hmm. deed done from, you know, John and Mary mm-hmm. to John and wife Mary. Okay.
Right.
Now there is a deed on record at the time, mm-hmm. contemporaneous with them being married. And as a result of this, now we have the property tenants by entirety. And we, by the way, do a lot of deeds like that.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of deeds like that. Another permutation of that same concept is when folks own property. I've got one of
right.
these just this week. She owns her property.
Mm-hmm.
She has gotten married 2 or 3 years ago. But
right.
At the time that she got married, she owned her home. And she now wants it to be tenants by entirety with her husband. They've been married 2 or 3, 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make the property tenants by entirety. So they come in and we do a deed from her
mm-hmm.
to her and her husband.
Right.
And now we've made the property tenants by entirety. Again, the triggering fact is whether at the time that the deed was signed, are the parties legally married? And if they are,
mm-hmm.
then now we're creating a tenants by entirety issue.
Okay. All right. And again, I would imagine more and more of a common scenario. So more and more people own property, not married.
It is. And I don't mean to pick on our 30-year-olds, because we've got 70 and 80-year-olds.
That's right. Absolutely. They're doing that. Yeah.
You know, our.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something we want to make sure that we demystify as well, right?
Right. And the issue that most people are concerned about there is the right of survivorship,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, they get the property together. They might have even a mortgage together, and then they get married. And then if one of them passes away and, you know, they don't have a will, that 50% interest that the one who died with doesn't automatically go to the survivor.
Right.
By intestacy, part of it does, but not all of it. So then we're here with the situation. If there are, you know, not kids involved, then you've got the parents of the
mm-hmm.
the husband who died, you know, who have ownership interest in this house. You got a mortgage. Well, if you just did that tenants by entirety deed, as Cecil just mentioned, then that leaves the property to the person who probably the deceased husband wanted to go to,
yeah.
who would be the spouse, who'd
right.
be the wife, or vice versa. But there are all these other, you know, aspects of the tenants by entirety ownership that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Which are important too. So again, you know, back to the tenants in common ownership, we talked a lot about, you know, the obligations to maintain, you know, your insurance and taxes and contribution and the petition to partition, all
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff we've talked about. But you also need to recognize that you have a liability with regard to the property as a tenants in common owner. You can't just be you know, blind to whatever's going on at the property.
Right.
Because you have an obligation to reasonably keep the property safe. And, you know, let's say that we have our brother who is possessing the property, but is doing things that are dangerous on the property, inviting friends over, so on and so forth. I mean,
right.
it could be anything, you know, or just not maintaining the property. You know, there could be, you know, steps that are dilapidated and dangerous on a beach house where
mm-hmm.
you're up elevated or whatever it may be. Well, you know, if the person who's visiting the property, you know, falls and gets hurt severely, then, you know, the defendant's not going to be just the person in possession of the property. It's going to be the person in possession and you.
Yeah. All the owners are going to be on the hook.
Right. So you have that obligation. And that, again, is a reason to make sure that insurance is maintained as well.
Absolutely.
We have some liability coverage.
All right. More to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And your questions are still welcome at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here at Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Thanks for making us part of your day and always joining us with the Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins on our Tuesday morning together with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. What else do we want to talk about?
Well, you know, let's wrap up here. We said we were going to circle back and talk a little bit more about this partition proceeding. I know we just have a couple minutes, 2-3 minutes left here at the end of the program here this morning. But, you know, as far as the partition proceeding goes, my goodness, we deal with those all the time. I have several of them on my desk right now that, we're dealing with, and they kind of take all different types of, flavors and appearances. You know, it depends on, you know, whether you're dealing with property that can be divided out. You know, there's one in my office right now that we're dealing with. It's a, you know, 30, 40 acre tract of land, and it was left to the kids as a result of the parents dying, and then they don't get to get along as it relates to how it should be sold or kept or whatever. They really want it to be kept because it's family property. So, you know, we attempted, of course, on that particular case, as we always do, to try to work it out by resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't able to do it. So you go forward with the petition to partition. And that one is pretty straightforward as it relates to the clerk, you know, simply entering an order designating who the commissioners are. And then the commissioners are to do, you know, the work on it and then report back to the court as to the division, provide the map.
Yeah, their first job is to actually see if it can be physically divided, right?
That's right, and that's normally where we go with those. Now, that sounds like, you know, a short process as I describe it here. You know, this one's probably been going on a year. I mean, it takes time. Well, you know, you have several hearings on things, meetings, so on and so forth, a lot of information to look at. But then when you get into the property that you cannot divide in kind, then there's lots of different options. There are issues with regard to whether we're going to do a public sale or a private sale. A public sale will be more like a foreclosure type sale, be at the courthouse steps, where, you know, it's ordered for the property to be sold, you know, immediately, quickly. You know, sometimes if the property is in distress, let's say there's a mortgage on the property that's not being paid and we need to go ahead and sell it so the foreclosure doesn't get ahead of us, maybe we go public sale route. It just depends on what the circumstances are. In many cases, the private sale route, if the court orders that, what we're talking about there is simply having the property actually listed with a realtor. So it appears by anyone who's buying the property, this is just a standard listed property.
And that may bring a better price.
Right. But the parties who are selling the property are not the actual owners. It's the commissioner or commissioners that are appointed by the court in order to, you know, make sure all the rules are followed. So as it relates to either of these situations regarding a sale, whether public or private, there is a 10-day upset bid period. Mm-hmm. So we want to get the highest price. We don't want someone to swing in and get a bargain if we can, you know, give them opportunities to upset the last bid by 5% or $750, whichever is higher. And each time there is a bid, you get 10 more days.
Right.
So that can continue on. Now that sounds a lot like a foreclosure because that sale process is about the same.
Yeah.
So,
but again, those are decisions that are made in the clerk's office.
That's right.
To get it started.
Yeah. And those are the nuts and bolts of how that works. A lot of details in the partition statutes.
All right. You want to find out more? You want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins at harvellandcollins.com, 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.